foods.
We are excited to have Terry Lemeron from Terry Naturally here at our store.
Really? Terry is back? When?
Wednesday, May 24th at 5:15.
What's he talking about?
Terry will be presenting on natural medicines that are better than drugs.
Will there be a sale?
Yes, our biggest sale ever that night on Terry products.
Wow, when is he coming?
Wednesday, May 24th at 5:15 here at Family Natural Foods in Wisconsin Rapids.
We hope to see you there. WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248DE broadcasting at 97.5 FM.
You're tuned into your home for the Wisconsin Badgers on 97.5 FM and 1320 AM WFHR, locally grown radio.
This is CBS News on the Hour, presented by Indeed.com.
I'm Linda Kenyon in Washington. President Biden is at the G7 summit in Japan, where he told reporters he's optimistic about a deal here at home for raising the nation's debt ceiling.
I still believe we'll be able to avoid a default and we'll get something decent done.
House Speaker Kevin McCarthy doesn't seem as upbeat as about the prospects for a deal.
We've got to get movement by the White House, and we don't have any movement yet.
The deadline to reach an agreement is June 1st, or the nation could default on its accumulated debt. World leaders of the G7 have been discussing a variety of global issues, including the war in Ukraine. They've also approved new sanctions against Russia, along with additional weapons to help Ukraine defend itself.
Not long before Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky landed in Japan, White House National Security Advisor Jake Sullivan announced a big shift in U.S.-Ukraine policy, approving the transfer of some F-16 and other jets by allies to Ukraine as it battles Russia.
That's CBS's Tom Foti. The Nebraska State Legislature has passed a major bill favored by conservative Republicans. KMTV's Alex Whitney has the story.
There hasn't been a bill with a bigger impact this session than LB 574, the controversial bill that looks to ban gender-affirming care and abortion, brought hundreds of protesters to the Capitol. But despite the pleas from those protesters, doctors, and businesses alike, the legislature would vote to pass the controversial bill.
In South Carolina, lawmakers have approved a six-week abortion ban. The head of the Palmetto State Abortion Fund is disappointed.
My grandma, she had more rights to her body than I currently have now, and my kids will hopefully not have to go through it for the rest of their lives. But we're fighting this fight that we already fought, and that gets discouraging.
The six-week ban includes exceptions for rape, incest, the life of the mother, and fetal abnormalities. The Reverend Al Sharpton delivered the eulogy at the funeral for Jordan Neely yesterday, who died when a fellow New York City subway rider restrained him in a chokehold. Reverend Sharpton said Neely suffered from mental illness.
People keep criminalizing people that need help.
Marine veteran Daniel Perry has been charged with manslaughter in the case. His lawyer says Perry intervened because Neely was threatening other passengers. Some new thinking out there when it comes to diet advice.
There's mounting evidence that people respond differently to food given differences in biology, lifestyle, and gut microbiomes, and that traditional one-size-fits-all nutrition advice is no longer as useful. The National Institutes of Health has started enrolling participants to take part in a study at 14 locations nationwide. Experts want to better understand how differences in biology, lifestyle, and environment can affect our health.
That's CBS's Jim Crisula. And this is CBS News.
Find your next great hire with Indeed. Their hiring platform makes it easy to attract, interview, and hire candidates all in the same place. Visit Indeed.com/credit.
Without the ones like you who work tirelessly to keep things running, everything would suddenly stop. Hospitals, factories, schools, and power plants, they all depend on you. No matter the weather, emergency, or time of day, you're the ones who get it done. At Grainger, we're here for you with professional-grade industrial supplies. Count on real-time product availability and fast delivery. Call, clickgrainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.
This is Jill Schlesinger, CBS News business analyst. Every year, investors lose money because they trade on emotions and hearsay instead of data. But there's a solution. StockCharts.com, the leading online charting tool that experts and disciplined traders have used for over 20 years. You can do the same. Go to StockCharts.com for a free 30-day trial. Pick the stocks and indexes you want to track, review historical data, spot the trends, then make informed decisions and invest with confidence. Go to StockCharts.com and start your free trial today.
Hey, what's up, y'all? I'm Kelly Clarkson, and as the daughter of a school teacher, I know just how important education is. No matter how old you are or your situation, continuing to learn will enrich your life and help remove barriers you didn't even know were there. So much opportunity, y'all. Whether it's a foreign language, history, or a different way to look at things, take some time each day to learn something new. This message is courtesy of the United States Air Force.
One call can do it all. Your business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media Network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the flexibility. You have the control. Civic Media, 608-819-8255.
Hear ye, hear ye, everyone. The King Charles Latte has arrived. The English toffee and vanilla are so smooth. Find your royal treat at From the Ground Up Coffee House, Wisconsin Rapids. A royal thank you to this week's Pet of the Week sponsor, From the Ground Up Coffee House.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR.
Ample sunshine expected this afternoon with highs around 72. Winds out of the northwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies, tonight lows around 48. Partly cloudy skies, tomorrow highs level off around 74. Dry with temperatures a bit above average, Monday and Tuesday, and highs from the mid-70s to the upper 70s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 52.
From Wisconsin Rapids to Stevens Point, your news talk and sports is on 97.5 FM, locally grown radio.
Sampling the news desserts of the week, here is your host, Jim Santel.
Good morning. This is Jim Santel, and I am delighted to have you with me today. It is Saturday, May 20th, 2023. This is our weekly review, our analysis, and our discussion of those very most important stories, those news events in the areas of law and government, and yes, the aspiration for justice in America. Thank you for joining me and my always wonderful, attentive, and highly professional producer, Anya. We are together today in the studios of WAUK in downtown, beautiful downtown Waukesha, as always. But we're broadcasting throughout the stations, the listening areas of Civic Media throughout the state of Wisconsin. Delighted, honored to have you join Anya and me for the next 2 hours as we talk about some of these major issues in government and justice. And we, yes, indeed, do have a very ambitious but achievable agenda today, a chock-full syllabus of things to talk about. We'll get to that in just a few moments. As always, during the course of this hour and next, we are so delighted to have your phone calls, your comments, your questions, your objections, your observations about the things that are on our agenda, our syllabus every single week. That phone number is 844-967-2789. Once again, 844-967-2789. Morning Cannolis, here a production of Civic Media, soliciting, encouraging, delighted to have your thoughts, comments, and especially questions as we talk about civics in America, the intersection between these news stories and things that we should all know and probably in many ways do know, but need recitation from the time that we got our initial civics training way back in middle school, high school, maybe college, maybe beyond. But the things that animate our lives and our livelihood in America in 2023 going ahead as well. As I indicated, we do always this morning have an ambitious but achievable agenda, hopefully educational for you, also somewhat inspiring, because we always ask here on Morning Cannolis three significant questions. We try to address what happened. What are the facts? What do we actually know about the events of our times? What actually happened out there during the course of the past week, or perhaps in some cases beyond that? Second, why are those facts important? What is relevant about those facts? What's material to our understanding? Why should they animate who we are and what we are as a nation? And third, in many instances, not all of them, but many instances, the question raised, what do we do? How do we react? How do we pursue actions, responses, answers to those kinds of things that are in the news? What happened? Why is it important? And what, if anything, can we, should we, should we ponder thinking about doing in the exercise of our own rights as civilians and as people who are committed to the future of this nation and the future of this world as well? What should we do this morning in that connection? The future of our nation, of our world, is hugely dependent upon the past, right? History is a significant thing. Very frequently, most often in this portion of our broadcast, I talk about things that happened on this day in history. On this day in history, and this morning, sort of a special rendition, a special incarnation of that. Because we're going to chat for this first segment about two very significant historical events that happened in the world and also happened here in the United States of America, both many, many years ago, this past week in history. Let's begin by the one that has been much in the news, not only because of the historical significance of it, but because of the contemporary 2023 response and observance of this particular event. The state of Israel, the Republic of Israel, we know well. We know where it is, the connections between the United States of America, diplomatic and otherwise social, cultural, religious, other kinds of things that tie us to the Republic of Israel. We know as well that in the wake of the Second World War, after that Second World War, a huge effort to try to focus upon the recreation of an independent Israeli state. And the United Nations at that time adopted something called the Partition Plan for Palestine. It was recommending specifically the creation of an independent Arab and Jewish state, both of them. Significantly, that was the initial commission for both a Jewish state and an Arab state, roughly in the same geography, recommending the creation of that, placing Jerusalem under international control. And that was the proposal from way back in the years following World War II and certainly the Holocaust. This cataclysmic time of horror visited upon our residents on the face of this planet, Jews, other people identified by Hitler as being the kinds of folks who should not be part of our worldwide experience, and eliminating more than 6 million people at that time. In the final months of this British time of occupancy, something called the British Mandate, a civil war broke out between Palestinian Arabs and some Jews, beginning the first stage of what was called the 1948 Palestine War. The British terminated that mandate, that so-called commission, on the 14th of May of 1948. The 14th of May of 1948, and that's the day that Israel then declared independence from any other entities, became its own independent nation on May 14th of 1948, 75 years ago this past week. And that is what has been observed this past week. We know as well that almost immediately after the announcement of that independent state, an independent state almost immediately recognized by our president at that time, Harry Truman, got together with the leadership of Israel at the time, David Ben-Gurion. That name, the first prime minister of the state of Israel, his name now attached to many important places throughout the world, but also in Israel, commemorating his time as the first leader of the modern nation of Israel, got together, and our president also recognized Israel on that same date. And almost immediately, as I've just indicated, Israel became involved in the first of many conflicts that it has suffered and engaged in with five of its Arab neighboring states. And during the course of the days following May 14th, May 15th, starting the 1948 Arab-Israeli War, early the next year, the 1914 armistice agreements left Israel, in the wake of those first skirmishes, in charge of about one-third more territory than that initial partition plan had called for. And regrettably, there was no independent Arab state created, which was, again, the initial plan in the post-World War II eras. During the stages of that initial war, 700,000 Palestinian Arabs were expelled or fled from Israel to the West Bank, into Gaza, neighboring Arab countries, and fewer than 150,000 actually remained in Israel at that time. About 260,000 Jews also at the same time emigrated from around the world and came to Israel. 1967 years later, another conflict. The Six-Day War resulted in the Israeli occupation of the West Bank. We know that as well. The Gaza Strip, along with the Egyptian Sinai Peninsula. You know that well. The Syrian Golan Heights. And Israel effectively annexed both East Jerusalem and also the Golan Heights area during the course of that follow-up engagement of a military nature. Many of those things followed, of course, and we know well the history, even since 1967, other wars, other conflicts, and the attempts to establish peace in that area of the world, sometimes with success, sometimes not. A few steps forward, sometimes back, halting agreements, sometimes with great positive accomplishment, and sometimes not. This past week, recognizing that checkered history, that time of both celebration of the creation of a new Israeli state for the first time in contemporary history, but also a time of concern for the Palestinians. They refer to this period of time, that is May 15th of 1948, as something called the Natka. They call that the catastrophe because that was the time that they lost their homeland. And so even while the Israelis celebrated, and throughout the world we celebrated the creation of this new state, not only in the wake of the Holocaust, in the wake of World War II, it also came with this other side in which the world leaders at that time did not address the issue that we still address today, which is the creation of an independent Palestinian state. It is a homeland of many people. Also significant to acknowledge that this is the place of at least three so-called Abrahamic faiths, certainly Christianity, but also Judaism and also Islam. All of those religions gathered together in that place and in the contemporary times in Israel and in other places throughout the world. We recognize this past week, not only the creation once again of the Israeli state 75 years ago, but the continuing efforts to try to address the Palestinian issue, thorny, sometimes intractable, a very, very difficult issue to address, and also a rule of law issue, right? This has to do with government. This has to do with justice, as the Israeli government and as other governments in that area wrestle with what is it right to do as a way of advancing both the modernity of the area, but also ensuring that people are treated well regardless of their religion, regardless of their nationality, regardless of where they come from, the notion that people should indeed have a homeland, a place they can look to and say, this is indeed my home. And so this past week on May 14th, both observances in favor, in support of, and yes, in celebration of this wonderful creation of the State of Israel, but also marred by strong protests about what happened 75 years ago, both internal and external to Israel. The State of Israel recognizing in Jerusalem, which is now its principal capital. We recognized also Jerusalem during the course of the Trump administration as the capital, previously having been Tel Aviv. Jerusalem saw on May 14th of this past week huge amounts of observances and celebration, but also protests underscoring the unresolved nature of what is going on there. Rule of law issues to be addressed by the Israelis, by the Palestinians. I would offer by all of us on the face of the planet, certainly America, much involved in that because of our longstanding relationship, not only with Israel, but with all of those nations in the Middle East. I spent a lot of time in Iraq, as you well know, very much cognizant of the fact that in that area, a huge amount of focus among diverse Arab populations of all people, committed nonetheless to try to figure this out, even as the history continues to animate the days that we experience today. When we come back, another significant event in our national history having to do with education. America, and yes, indeed, race, in these first segments this morning on Morning Cannolis here on the studios and the broadcast stations of Civic Media. Continue with me for that discussion right after this break.
This is Joe Cordell of Cordell & Cordell. Men, you fought hard for the role that you play in your children's lives. This Father's Day, Cordell & Cordell celebrates you the entire month of June. Join us every Friday for our live webinar series, Father's Fridays. There you'll receive much useful information from our panel of speakers. To register, go to CordellCordell.com/Father's Day.
Schedule an appointment with one of Cordell & Cordell's Madison area attorneys. 8040 Excelsior Drive, Suite 403, Madison, Wisconsin, 53717.
Discover MyPillow 2.0, Mike Lindell's upgraded pillow. Soft, smooth, and cool with temperature-regulating fabric. There's a limited time buy one, get one free offer using promo code COMFORT. Proudly made in the USA, 10-year warranty, and a 60-day money-back guarantee. Visit MyPillow.com, click Radio Podcast Square for the BOGO deal. Use promo code COMFORT or call 1-800-976-6949 now.
Food. It's at the heart of every party, so make it delicious, savory, and local. Two Hearts Wedding and Event Catering will help you craft the perfect meal for the heart of your party. They use locally sourced ingredients and can cater any event, from your 4th of July party to your wedding, even a business luncheon. Two Hearts Wedding and Events Catering operates out of the Elks Lodge in Wisconsin Rapids and is open to the public on Bingo Wednesdays and Fish Fry Fridays. Visit their website, twoheartsllc1.com. That's the number one, as in the first place you want to stop to check out Two Hearts LLC.
So, have you done sports?
Yes.
What about weather?
Done that.
I've got it! The moon!
Hey everybody, you're listening to James Help Seth pick the next theme for this week's Seth Faces the Music. It's on Sundays from 6 to 8 p.m. on locally grown radio, WFHR. The problem is, he's done so many shows already, it's getting tough to find the next group of songs. Don't worry though, it'll be fine.
Yeah, alright, you got me, I give up.
That's it! The theme for the next Seth Faces the Music will be...
Keep up on the day's news, talk, and sports on Wisconsin's home for locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR, 1320 AM.
Civic Media, my meteorologist, Derek Height. Currently, it's 50 degrees.
Grandkid was born.
If you two music
And we are back. This our second segment this morning on Morning Cannolis. Thank you once again for joining me in our discussion of the significant issues in law, in government, and the aspiration for justice in our nation and around the world. Right before the break, talking about this observance of just this past week, the 75th anniversary of the creation of the modern state of Israel. It does not come without its protests, specifically among the Palestinian populations who do not to this day have an independent Palestinian nation, which was the plan in the wake of World War II, has not yet been accomplished. And so we recognize that as a rule of law, a justice-related, yes, a government-related and public involvement issue yet to be addressed, not only by the Israelis, by the Palestinians, but as we know well, because of the international interest in that, by all people who are concerned about peace and about the delivery of justice in that part of the world and beyond. A second major event in observance of an historical, significantly historical event of this past week. Also, this one taking place on May 17th of 1954, 69 years ago this past week in this nation, a few years after the creation of the independent and new state of Israel in our nation, a major change in how we understand education and race in America. You know what I'm talking about. This is the decision in Brown versus Board of Education issued by the United States Supreme Court on May 17th, 1954, a unanimous 9-0 decision in favor of the Brown family, thus the name of the case, and other plaintiffs. The decision consisted of a single opinion written by the Chief Justice at that time. His name is Earl Warren. And all the justices at that time joined in it. He worked very hard, we know now, historically, to accomplish that very important point. The Chief Justice wanted very desperately, and did accomplish this, wanted desperately to ensure that the message of Brown versus Board of Education came from a unanimous, not a divided Supreme Court. And he worked with many of his colleagues in the weeks and months before the issuance of that opinion, again, 69 years ago this past week, to accomplish just that. What is this case all about? Well, we know once again that this case involves the Brown family against the Board of Education of Topeka, Kansas. That's where this case comes out. from, and in particular, premised upon the 14th Amendment and this issue of whether or not segregated schools, the notion that children of different colors can in fact be segregated, and that would be a proper thing under our Constitution, legally, a part of our rule of law, part of our sense of justice. And for many years, that has been and that was the tradition in America. Nothing wrong with that legally until the Supreme Court got a hold of this particular challenge coming out of Kansas, a challenge that was advocated for by a fellow named Thurgood Marshall, who years later would take his own place on the Supreme Court as a justice of the Supreme Court, and no doubt the result of many, many years of very strategic and thoughtful legal litigation. Strategic in the sense of encouraging judges along the way to drop and refuse to acknowledge that continuing notion that separate schools are equal. Thurgood Marshall spending a huge amount of time putting together a strategy through the NAACP and other institutions to ensure that the civilians in America, our general population, began to understand that that notion is contrary to who we are, and it needed to be discarded as a part of our natural movement toward a better and more fair United States of America. Huge, huge focus on Thurgood Marshall and the work that he did in bringing this case to the United States Supreme Court in 1953 and 1954. And so, on this past week, 69 years ago, the Supreme Court addresses this issue and begins by saying, "We come to the question presented. Does segregation of children in public schools solely on the basis of race, even though the physical facilities and other tangible factors may be equal, does that deprive the children of the minority group of equal education opportunities?" That's what the Supreme Court says. That's how the Chief Justice articulates this all-important question. And he goes on to say that it did. He says, "To separate black children from others of similar age and qualifications solely because of their race generates a feeling of inferiority as to their status in the community that may affect their hearts and their minds in a way unlikely to ever be undone." What magic, what magical language, right? What transcendent language from the Supreme Court, our highest court in land, talking about the impact of segregation upon our youngest people in our nation, in particular, young black children who find themselves, their hearts and their minds affected by that notion of segregation. And in the end, the court finds that in the field of public education, the doctrine of separate but equal in Plessy versus Ferguson, also articulated in other cases prior to that, that cannot stand. Goes on to say, "Separate educational facilities are inherently unequal." This coming from the U.S. Supreme Court for the first time in 1954. "Therefore, we, the Supreme Court, hold that the plaintiffs," again the Brown and other families, "and those plaintiffs along with them, similarly situated," meaning not just the Brown family, but all people, all young people of color affected by, discriminated against by virtue of this separate but equal standard, all of them for whom the actions have been brought are by reason of the segregation complained of, they are deprived of the equal protection of the laws guaranteed by, yes indeed, the 14th Amendment. The 14th Amendment. I'm going to talk a little bit more about the 14th Amendment in our second hour as well. A classic and iconic decision by the Supreme Court, and I suspect that many of you, as you were growing up, probably one of the first decisions you ever heard about coming from our United States Supreme Court, again, 69 years ago this past week. We know as well that in the wake of the announcement of that case, things did not change overnight, and the Supreme Court had to revisit this Equal Protection Clause constitutional case in subsequent cases, including so-called Brown 2, in which the court said, "You've got to do this with all deliberate speed. Make this happen in America," following up to ensure that the announcement of this new principle, this new wonderful engagement, rule of law, justice, government principle, had effect. We still wrestle with that today. We still wrestle with education and race in America. And indeed, there's a case pending right before the Supreme Court right now, in which the Supreme Court is once again addressing the issue of whether or not race can be considered in admissions. I'm going to talk about that case once again in a future broadcast. But right after the break, we're going to go back to the Supreme Court and talk about other things that happened. Join us for that very important discussion coming up here on Morning Cannolis. Join us for that very important discussion.
From the home of NASCAR's Dick Trickle, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM, your news, talk, and sports station.
Locally grown 1320 AM and 97.5 FM WFHR programming is broadcast from the Bug Tussle Studios.
Bug Tussle, keeping you connected to the world around you.
As a mom and a teacher, I've done it all. Fundraisers, field trips, school assemblies. It's what we do for our children. Whether you're a public school parent, educator, or both, we share one goal: giving our children the best education. The Wisconsin Education Association Council looks forward this school year to partnering with you. Our children's success depends on it. Join us at weac.org. Welcome back to school.
What's your favorite thing about a good movie? What makes the perfect song? And what's it about the first lines of a book that will snatch our attention? If these questions intrigued your artsy interest, you don't want to miss Director's Cut on WFHR every Sunday night from 8 to 9. Your WFHR program director, James, and head of production, Seth, will be diving into the local arts and entertainment, hot topic movies, hidden gems, and more. Audience feedback and requests are encouraged for this fun and open conversation about art in all its forms. It's art supporting artists in their own words.
Radio advertising can change your business in a flash. Go from waiting around to no time to spare in no time flat. Do you have an event, need to hire, or have a message you need to get out? Call me, Ashley, today, 715-295-4922, because marketing starts early.
You should call my mom. She's good at this advertising stuff.
Call me today, 715-295-4922, and let's get started.
WFHR 97.5 FM 1320 AM is looking for organizations that regularly distribute information about employment opportunities to job applicants or have job applicants to refer. If your organization would like to receive notification of job vacancies, please notify us at 1690 2nd Avenue South, Wisconsin Rapids 54495, or call 715-424-1300. WFHR 97.5 FM 1320 AM is an equal opportunity employer and encourages women and minorities to apply.
Don't you wish your life came with a warning app?
Stop. That dog does not want to be petted.
A heads up before something bad happens.
You should not send that text.
Uh-oh. Life doesn't always give you time to change the outcome, but prediabetes does. With early diagnosis and a few healthy changes, you can reverse prediabetes and prevent or delay type 2 diabetes. To learn your risk, take the one-minute test today at doihaveprediabetes.org. Brought to you by the Ad Council and its prediabetes awareness partners.
Women hear a lot about self-care these days. Advice on ways to relax, exercise, eat healthy, and more. Those are all great. But one of the most important self-care steps we can take is making sure we're financially secure later in life. That means saving money for retirement. It's never too late to start. And it's the kind of self-care that brings peace of mind that lasts. For small steps you can take to save for retirement, visit wesaysaveit.org. That's wesaysaveit.org. A message from AARP and the Ad Council.
Here's your forecast from locally grown radio WFHR.
Ample sunshine expected this afternoon with highs around 72. Winds out of the northwest, 8 to 15 miles per hour. Mainly clear skies tonight, lows around 48. Partly cloudy skies tomorrow, highs level off around 74. Dry with temperatures a bit above average Monday and Tuesday, and highs from the mid-70s to the upper 70s.
For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Jennifer Wojcicki. Currently, it's 52.
157 South 1st Street, Milwaukee.
One call can do it all. Your business's message can be broadcast across the entire state of Wisconsin through the Civic Media network of stations, or we can focus the campaign in your hometown. We have the...
We are back here. Thank you for joining me and Anya in our Saturday morning broadcast, talking once again about government and law and justice in America. And as always, taking your phone calls at 844-967-2789, talking in our first segments about significant things that happened in the history of our nation and of our world in this past week, the creation of a new Israeli state, 75 years ago, and the announcement by our United States Supreme Court 69 years ago of an issue that continues also to dog us and to challenge us in America, that is the intersection between education and race in America, announcing in Brown versus Board of Education that separate facilities are inherently unequal and cannot stand under the 14th Amendment to the United States Constitution. A major landmark case continues to animate and also challenge us to ensure that education in America is not premised upon those kinds of race distinctions and race segregation. We continue to work on that throughout our nation. We do have a caller on the line, Dick calling in from Madison. Dick, glad to have you with me this morning. Your question, your comment, your observation for us this morning. And Dick, are you there with us from Madison? All right. And Dick, if we'd love to have your comment. If not, we'll move on to the United States Supreme Court, and we'll keep you on the line here, Dick, and we'll pull you up in just a few moments or so again. We're talking this morning, in addition to the history of the United States Supreme Court, we're also going to talk this now about things the United States Supreme Court did just this past week. We have chatted at great length in the past about the fact that this is the time period every single year, mid to late May, certainly into June of every single year, really not at the end of its term, but nearing the end of its Supreme Court term, in which it begins to release, to announce some of these major decisions, again, in our lives, in our livelihoods, that animate us, that define us, that direct us to do things, that tell us not to do things, that describe what the law is under the Constitution and under the federal laws passed by our legislature. The Supreme Court has begun to do that already. Last week, we talked about this major case involving the Commerce Clause in the U.S. Constitution. The Commerce Clause that basically interpreted by the Supreme Court to permit the state of California to impose upon pork producers and pork sellers an obligation to treat pigs and other barnyard animals, other livestock, well as a result of their involvement in producing those agricultural products, and prohibiting the sale of pork and those other products in California if indeed even out-of-state producers cannot certify the treatment of those animals in a way that's consistent with California law. The Supreme Court, in an opinion written by Neil Gorsuch, says the California can, in fact, do that. It is not a unanimous decision, but the Supreme Court says that, yes, indeed, that does not run afoul of the Commerce Clause, that the state of California, through this Proposition 12 that its citizenry passed, does, in fact, have the capacity to make those regulations upon pork producers and providers, even those who produce the product outside of their state and sold inside the state. This past week, at least two other major decisions as it goes through its docket of about 60 altogether. Let's talk about the first of those right now. The Supreme Court basically handed what I'll call twin victories to the technology platforms in America, certainly Twitter, Google, others out there. That's happening just on Thursday. It declined in these two cases to hold those platforms liable for content posted by users, people using those platforms. The case involving Google, the court rejected for now, efforts to limit the sweep of something called Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. This was a law that was passed by the United States Congress way back in the 90s. It was generally regarded as one of these pieces of legislation that enabled the internet to go forward, because what it said for the most part was and is that for those things that are posted on these lines on Twitter, on Google, Facebook, TikTok, all these kinds of platforms, the providers of the platforms themselves would not be held liable for the content posted by people using those platforms. That's basically what Section 230 says. Well, the Supreme Court this past week basically decided not to touch that issue a whole lot, but in a separate case involving Twitter, the court did rule unanimously, again, 9-0, another unanimous ruling by the Supreme Court, everybody in agreement, that another law that allows suits for aiding and abetting terrorism did not apply to the ordinary activities of social media companies. And so what is this all about? Well, the first case, the Twitter case involved a person named Nawaz Al-Assaf. Mr. Alasaf was killed in a terrorist attack at the Reina nightclub in Istanbul in 2017, and the Islamic State, ISIL or ISIS, took responsibility for that attack. You may recall that horrific event way back in 2017. His family, Mr. Alasaf's family, sued Twitter and Google and Facebook, saying that they had allowed ISIS to use their platforms to recruit and train terrorists, this indoctrination theory. And as a result of that, Mr. Alasaf and others killed, trying to hold them responsible under the Terrorist Act that the United States Congress had previously enacted. Clarence Thomas, writing for the majority, once again, a majority, 9-0 majority, said that plaintiff's allegations are insufficient to establish that these defendants, that is the platform providers, aided and abetted ISIS in carrying out the relevant attack. He went on to say this. Acknowledged that the defendants transmitted staggering amounts of content, said it appears that for every minute of the day, approximately 500 hours of video are uploaded to YouTube, 510,000 comments posted on Facebook, and 347,000 tweets are sent on Twitter. This is the writing of the Supreme Court Justice Thomas on behalf of the majority. He acknowledged the platforms use algorithms to steer all of us, including regular users, toward content that interests them. It says, so for example, a person who watches cooking shows on YouTube is more likely to see cooking-based videos and advertisements for cookbooks, whereas someone, he went on to say, who likes to watch professional lectures might see collegiate debates and advertisements for TED Talks. But, he added, and here's the point of the decision rendered by the Supreme Court just this past week. Not all of the content on defendants' platforms is so benign. ISIS uploaded videos that fundraised for weapons of terror and that showed brutal executions of soldiers and civilians alike. And despite the platform's failure to remove such conduct, that was not in the end, Justice Thomas wrote, enough to establish liability under the act that was invoked for the purposes of this lawsuit. Enough to invoke a liability for aiding and abetting the activities of ISIS. He said that required plausible allegations that they gave such knowing and substantial assistance to ISIS that they culpably participated in the Reina attack. And because of that, the terrorism law under which this lawsuit was filed could not support the claims, again, in the case involving Twitter and also these other platforms. There was a second case also related to this, and that's the one that raises the implication of Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act. In that case, the case against Google, independent of this, that was brought by a family of a young woman named Nohemi Gonzalez. She was a 23-year-old college student. She was killed in what I suspect you all may recall, this horrific Paris attack on the Catalan venue during those attacks in November of 2015, also targeting the concert hall in that area. The family's lawyers of Ms. Gonzalez argued that YouTube, a subsidiary of Google, had used those algorithms that the Supreme Court made reference to push this Islamic State video, this indoctrination online, to interested viewers. And in a very brief, unsigned opinion that accompanied this other case involving Twitter, in this other case called Gonzalez versus Google, the court said it would not address the application of Section 230 to a complaint that states little, if any, plausible claim for relief. The court returned that case to the appeals court in light of our decision in the other matter under the Terrorist Act. And so, a huge victory, as I said at the start, for the platform providers, an awful lot of people looking at that, determining whether or not the future of the internet would be dependent upon this decision. The Supreme Court this past week says that at least under these two related statutes, there is not a cause of action for those families of victims who are killed as a result of people who are indoctrinated, who are prompted to act violently, horrifically, the Supreme Court acknowledges, but nonetheless not enough to establish liability in those companies, those online companies, for those deaths. And so a significant thing when it comes to the Supreme Court wrestling with technology and the changes in our world, anticipating too, very likely, that in the future, our artificial intelligence will also come before the Supreme Court as it addresses these issues too. A huge case just this past week, the Supreme Court not holding tech companies liable for user posts that are out there. A second matter, arguably not quite as cataclysmic as that, but nonetheless important in the area of intellectual property. And we have chatted about the predicates of this case before. Also, a major decision, this one not unanimous by the United States Supreme Court. I'll get to that in just a moment. The Supreme Court on Thursday found that Andy Warhol, long departed, no longer with us, was not entitled to draw on a very prominent photographer's portrait of the artist Prince. Remember Prince, also no longer with us? Andy Warhol had used a photograph of a photographer named Lynn Goldsmith. She had gotten a copyright in the photograph that she had taken of Prince, an image of the musician. And that photograph became a part of the estate, if you will, of the entire entity here, Lynn Goldsmith, maintaining that when Andy Warhol took that photograph in which she had a right, copyright, intellectual property right to that photograph and turn it into something else. And if you go online, you can take a look at what this changed photograph, so-called transformed photograph, Andy Warholized, if you will, to turning his name into a verb. She focused on the fact that Warhol and Lynn Goldsmith, again, these players involved in this case were contesting whether or not his alterations, his uses of that photograph were sufficiently great to justify her action alleging copyright infringement, the theft of intellectual property. And in the end, Justice Sotomayor, by a vote of 7-2, writing on behalf of the majority, she writing on behalf of the 7, found this. She said that indeed Warhol and Goldsmith in this fight between them, that in fact Warhol had in fact violated the copyright and that Lynn Goldsmith is entitled to damages against the estate that now held the rights to this changed, copyrighted, but transformed piece of art. The court said, and Sotomayor wrote this in particular, to hold otherwise would potentially authorize a range of commercial copying of photographs to be used for purposes that are substantially the same as those of the originals. She went on to say this, as long as the user somehow portrays the subject of the photograph differently, he could make modest alterations to the original, sell it to an outlet to accompany a story about the subject, and claim transformative use. And so finds, in fact, that there was indeed a copyright infringement, intellectual property violation. Here again, 7 members of the Supreme Court agreed with that, found against the Andy Warhol state in favor of the Lynn Goldsmith company and her entitlement to damages against the estate. Now, significantly, there were 2 justices, including Elena Kagan and the Chief Justice, John Roberts, who opposed that. And in dissent, Elena Kagan said this. She said that this will stifle creativity of all sorts. This will prevent people from doing creative things. She went on to say it will impede new art and music and literature. It will thwart the expression of new ideas and the attainment of new knowledge. It will make our world poorer. And significantly, Justice Kagan's opinion, according to Justice Sotomayor, and again, they exchanged these in advance, Justice Sotomayor anticipating that dissent, Justice Sotomayor wrote that the opinion written by Justice Kagan was made up of a series of misstatements and exaggerations from a dissent's very first sentence to its very last. So we have some sparring going on between the Supreme Court justices, Kagan and Sotomayor. And right after the break, I'm going to talk with you about that sparring and the lesson that comes not only from this case about intellectual property, about things like general uses in the public domain, but also the importance of understanding that these bright lines between liberals and conservatives do not always hold. Come back after the break as we talk more about this Warhol-Prince case.
It's Terry time.
Hey, it's Steven.
And Katrina from Family Natural Foods.
We are excited to have Terry Lemeron from Terry Naturally here at our store.
Really? Terry is back? When?
Wednesday, May 24th at 5:15.
What's he talking about?
Terry will be presenting on natural medicines that are better than drugs.
Will there be a sale?
Yes, our biggest sale ever that night on Terry products.
Wow, when is he coming?
Wednesday, May 24th at 5:15 here at Family Natural Foods in Wisconsin Rapids.
We hope to see you there.
If you need a caterer for your wedding, reunion, bridal shower, or graduation party this summer, check out Chatterbox Catering and Kellner. They serve only the best and make all their food from scratch. Homemade soups, sauces, entrees, and desserts. Book them for your next party. And if you need an event space, they can help with that too. Their indoor venue is in Kellner. Proudly veteran-owned and operated, Chatterbox Catering. 715-712-3393. 715-712-3393.
This is Mike Moen from Wisconsin News Connection. You may have heard my stories on civic media. Wisconsin News Connection is surveying listeners to learn how to better report on issues important to you. Go to WISNewsSurvey.com, fill it out, and you'll be entered to win a $50 Target gift card. Once again, WISNewsSurvey.com to help improve the news and enter to win a $50 Target gift card. Thanks, and we look forward to your response at WISNewsSurvey.com.
If you're a motorist of the four-wheel variety, please watch out for those of us in Wisconsin who do their traveling on two wheels. Adjust your mirrors to reduce your blind spots. Allow motorcyclists a full lane width. Use your turn signal when merging or changing lanes. And allow more following distance between you and the motorcycle. Motorists and motorcyclists can work together to achieve zero preventable deaths on Wisconsin roads. Zero in Wisconsin. Together we can save lives. Learn more at zeroinwisconsin.gov.
Sponsored by the Wisconsin DOT.
From Alexander Field to the Central Business District, locally grown radio, 97.5 FM and WFHR 1320 AM.
70s. For Civic Media, I'm meteorologist Derek Height.
Last segment of our first hour here on Morning Cannolis, and right before the break, talking about this other major case issued by our United States Supreme Court just a couple of days ago, a case involving Andy Warhol and his taking a photograph of, produced by a photographer named Lynn Goldsmith, the photograph of the artist Prince, and transforming it, according to the Andy Warhol folks, using it in the public domain, a fair use doctrine. That was their allegation. The Supreme Court disagrees with that. And in the end, by a 7-2 vote in a case, an opinion written by Justice Sonia Sotomayor, says the photographer's original works, like those of other photographers, are indeed entitled to this copyright protection, even against famous artists, she says. And as I was saying right before the break, this decision, a 7-2 majority opinion, prompts Elena Kagan not only to write in vicious dissent and a very, very pointed dissent, but also to comment about the back and forth between the two of them. And again, typically, we regard at least Sonia Sotomayor and Elena Kagan, probably along with Ketanji Brown Jackson, as being the three sort of allied members of the Supreme Court when it comes to liberal issues. But the point of this, of course, is just because we attach those very imperfect and often misleading labels to the way that judges and justices decide cases, here it comes out in the open. And not only is there sparring going on in public in the written decisions issued by the Supreme Court and then the dissent issued by Justice Kagan, this spills out into the public. And Justice Kagan says during the course of her introduction to her disagreement with what Justice Sotomayor has written, she says, "I'll not make an attempt to rebut every point that the majority's accusations make against me." And she says, "Instead, I'll rest on my original submission. But I'll make just two suggestions about reading what follows," talking directly to us, she says. "First, when you see that my description of a precedent differs from the majority's, go take a look at the decision," she says. "And second, when you come across an argument that you recall the majority took issue with, go back to its response and ask yourself about the ratio of reasoning to other matters in the case. With those two recommendations, I'll take my chances," she says, "on the reader's good judgment." Those readers are you and me. And the Supreme Court, again, not only encouraging us to take a look at that opinion, but again, expressing this notion that the Supreme Court, each different member, has the capacity, the authority, I'd offer even the obligation to issue opinions, make rulings, and come to conclusions based upon their independent views, in this case, about the importance of intellectual property. This is undeniably a big win for the intellectual property bar, if you will, the intellectual property companies out there in various areas, establishing, indeed, you can't just take a photograph that is copyrighted, transform it in some way of a pop culture way, and maintain that that is a different kind of transformative piece of art. Supreme Court says, nope. It still has that copyright protection, and therefore the Warhol estate, the Warhol company, liable to Lynn Goldsmith for that action by Andy Warhol while he was alive. A huge case, not only in the area of interrelationships between the Supreme Court justices, but also for intellectual property. It joins this past week this other case involving the internet, defining the extent to which there is liability, and now apparently none, under the acts that the lawsuits were brought, claiming liability for postings made on the internet by individuals, by groups, by people, in particular ISIS, that indoctrinated folks to go out there and commit horrific acts of violence, resulting in the deaths of family members. Two major cases: copyright, intellectual property, and once again, technology. The internet, what is its future as well? In our last few moments, so we do have some callers calling in, which we appreciate tremendously. Let's begin with Dick in Madison. Dick, join us with your comment or your question.
Well, it's a little off topic. It's on the debt ceiling.
And we're going to get to that in the next, but make your comment. I'm going to get to the debt ceiling on the top of the next hour. But so go ahead, Dick. Okay. Introduce us to that topic. Go ahead.
Well, there was a gal on a name escapes me, a representative from out east this morning I'm watching, and she kept, Democrat now, referring to some of these Republicans that are, really would be on board with this, then they'll say so behind closed doors, and she kept responding and talking about them and describing them as reasonable and moderate, to which I have two different ways of characterizing them. I would call him unpatriotic and lacking in courage, given the gravity of what we're up against.
Right. And so, again, the comment you're making, Dick, very, very important. The things that we say in public, the things that we say in private, right? And this particular representative saying, listen, behind closed doors, these folks are telling me they will support this, but publicly saying we cannot do this. At the top of our next hour, because you raised this, Dick, I'm going to talk about the debt ceiling and not only the things going on right now. We know that the cases, the discussions have been in and out of positive directions and then not so positive directions. We're going to talk about the implications of this other issue. Many people saying, well, gee, if they don't come to a conclusion, if there is not an agreement, a majority of members of the Congress can, in fact, endorse this notion of raising the debt limit, bringing off all sorts of economic catastrophe to us, then, in fact, the president should invoke what? The 14th Amendment. I'm going to talk about what that means, what the 14th Amendment says, what it doesn't say, and whether that really is a viable option. So I appreciate very much, Dick, the comment introducing that, and also calling upon our representatives to be candid and to be consistent, right, Dick, both in public and behind closed doors when it comes to an issue that relates to nothing less than the future of our nation, its economic stability, and the programs and support that is provided to all of us directly and indirectly through a government and a budget and a government that pays its bills for past incurred debts on a regular basis. Appreciate that call very much, Dick. We'll talk more about that. Mark is also on the line. Mark, glad to have you with us here in these last couple of minutes in our first hour.
Yeah, I find it kind of fascinating that some of these states where they're actually banning thought and they're banning books, particularly for young children. Apparently now in Wisconsin, one school district fired a teacher for criticizing the fact that they dropped the Rainbowland song, right, from the music,
right, she's
program,
a teacher named Melissa Temple, right? Young. Right. She's right here in the school district of Waukesha. It has been proposed by the superintendent that she be terminated, and that is a part of the public domain
right
now.
And
right. Go ahead.
Just kind of ridiculous that I can remember. This is going back a long time now. What books I was able had access to through a school program, the Scholastic Book Club, and I can remember. Mm-hmm. Either in fifth or sixth grade,
sure.
I got a copy of The Rise and Fall of Adolf Hitler, mm-hmm, by William Shirer. And hearing about the Holocaust from a fifth grade teacher, what that teacher would face today if a grade school teacher started talking about the Holocaust and, you know, talking about the showers and all that.
Right,
as she did, Mrs. Mackey did back when I was in fifth grade.
And we remember Mrs. Right? And the good things that all the Mrs. Mackeys out there did to educate us using books like the ones, as you said, from the Scholastic series. Recall that as well, the weekly readers, those kinds of things that brought us to understand large things out there. And Mark, we're going to talk more about that issue of books and the First Amendment and what teachers do and students have under the Fifth Amendment, the First Amendment, what their rights are in future cases. We'll talk about that, Mark, in the future.
Sometimes I just cannot believe all the storms we've gone through here.
I can only hope that we'll be able to leave this house to you one day, baby. You're our legacy.
Planning for these disasters will make sure we're safe, and is the best way to protect that legacy. You know what? We should make an emergency communication plan. That way we're ready this year. At my dorm, we have emergency kits for earthquakes and wildfires, but I'm sure there's something more local I can send you with a link.
Okay.
Smart.
Protect your legacy. Visit ready.gov/plan for the tools and tips you need to start your emergency preparedness plan today. Brought to you by FEMA and the Ad Council.
WFHR, Wisconsin Rapids, 1320 AM and W248 DE, broadcast.